Today is February 26th, 2014, and this is episode number 244 of the Apple Context Machine, podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a foppish phantasm. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Phantasm, you say?
Foppish phantasm.
I'm picturing your translucent foppish collar right now.
Yes, with the phantasmally foppish scarf.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm also picturing a band of Ghostbusters chasing you down the street.
Yes, and is that because oh my god, what's his name? Just died. I can never remember his real name.
Egon Spengler.
He just died.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was really sad.
Yeah, people die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of awesome movies came out of that too.
True.
Because we had Ghostbusters, Groundhog Day.
Yep. As well as, of course, the Bill Murray tour de force of... I can't remember anything. What's the movie did in the Army? The
Stripes.
Stripes. Good Lord. How do I forget that one?
I'm not sure how you forgot that one. Because that's... That was a really good movie. Harold Ramis, that's the name you're trying to think of.
Thank you. Yeah, so rest in peace, Mr. Ramis. We appreciate all the fantastic work. At least I do. I don't know about Jeff.
Oh, yeah. I was actually sad. The tweet that I put out after I heard that Harold had died was, if all the sadness is represented by this Twinkie, the sadness right now is a Twinkie the size of New York City.
Aww, that's touching.
And the awesome thing is, Mike Rose from Tua, mm-hmm. He tweeted back and he said, that's one big Twinkie. Which is awesome because that's the line back to the whole Twinkie line.
Of course. Mike Rose is a clever fellow. I like that guy.
So do I.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Samsung, on the other hand. LOL.
Oh, I see what you did there. Well played.
It's one of my patented segues, except for this one almost had some relevance somewhere. Anyway, Samsung this week has been busy at the Mobile World Congress.
That's right. They rolled out or announced all new smartphones and smartwatches, revolutionizing the market.
Well, did they claim that, though?
No.
Yeah, I don't think they...
They actually didn't revolutionize anything.
I saw something where some Samsung executive made the argument that phones don't have to be revolutionary every year. Of course, I remember how much heat Apple... Not from Samsung, but Apple, of course, takes heat whenever they do something that's not seen as... revolutionary, but that's beside the point. So Samsung introduced the Galaxy S5, not to be mistaken for the iPhone 5S, but what really sort of just kind of makes me, you know, feel bad for Samsung is they switched from a Roman numeral thing to an Arabic numeral thing, and it's just like...
Well, to be fair, no one else is doing that. Oh, wait.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not accusing Samsung of copying Apple by calling their device the S5. They had the S2, the S3, and the S4. Of course it's the S5. It's just fun. I mean, it's like, I don't know how to express what I'm feeling about that.
You know, now that I think about it, because I'm visualizing their product naming scheme in my head, and they really pretty much had to go to Arabic numerals. because otherwise,
Civ.
Yeah, it's SV. That's what people would see. It's like when people say, "Oh, it's OS X." No, it's OS 10. It's a Roman numeral. I just said Roman numeral.
But they did They did SIV for the S4,
which is Civ.
Which is Civ, yeah. So
and the 3 was C. So I just came up with an argument that really doesn't hold water, much like a sieve.
I look at Galaxy S5 and it just kind of it's like, you know, the little kid who's just, you know, just furious that the world doesn't see him as being as cool as the big kids, and I don't know, it's silly.
Well, the new phone, it has a dimpled back.
It does have a dimpled back, which, by the way, looks foul to me.
They call it a leather-like back, which is weird because I didn't realize leather was had a consistency of dimpled plastic.
I do like the blue color, though. Honestly.
Okay.
They're doing like a black, a sort of coppery thing. They're doing a white. I think they have a gray, maybe. I think the blue is actually, it's a really nice color. I like that shade of blue. I don't like the dimples, though.
Yeah, the dimples are kind of weird. The plasticky look, to me, looks very plasticky. No, a better way to say that is the plasticky look of the S5 conveys a sense of cheapness and fragility to me.
Yeah. I wonder if like one of my pet peeves about the S4 is that you could push on the back and feel give in between the battery.
Well, this has a removable battery as well. It wouldn't surprise me if you can do the same thing, and that may very well just be a side effect of having removable batteries like that.
Well, it's at least a side effect of having a removable battery and then making the back case too thin for the sake of weight instead of rigidity and strength.
And this version of the Galaxy S is bigger and heavier than the previous.
It's got a slightly bigger screen, but it has the same screen resolution. I can't imagine anyone would notice the lower pixel density, though.
Yeah, they went from a 5 to a 5.1 inch screen. This is a problem. If you look at the lineup of Samsung smartphones and tablets, mm-hmm. and look at the screen sizes that they have, it's crazy. There's like 10, 12, maybe more screen sizes that Samsung has in their devices. It's just all over the board. That's got to be a blast for Android app developers.
I'm sure fragmentation has always been an issue for the Android ecosystem. I mean, but in this particular case, it's the same screen resolution as its predecessor, so it won't actually matter to developers.
No, that's true. It won't matter to developers in this case. And for end users, the larger screen size won't matter either because they won't be able to see the difference, which then has me asking the question, why'd they put a bigger screen on it if it doesn't matter to anyone?
Good question. Unless it's bigger for bigger sake. Wouldn't surprise me. They didn't say that I saw. And you know, the Mobile World Congress is where stuff gets shown. It's not really where it gets announced. You know, there will be some kind of awkward launch event.
Right, because it actually launches in April.
Yeah, in April. Which is a shorter window.
Why is Sienna holding up a sign in the sound booth saying, "I told you size matters"?
I don't know.
That's awkward.
That is, yeah.
Huh. So, megapixels.
Yeah, they have a nice big fat 13 megapixel camera with some various new features. The whole phone is just snoozy, man.
The whole phone is just snoozy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You were saying, Brian?
The whole phone, snoozy.
Yes. Oh, my God. We're still on this topic?
Yes, we are still on this topic.
I was really hoping...
We haven't even gotten to the fingerprint sensor that they're doing.
Okay, the fingerprint sensor... They're in a position where they kind of had to do that because Apple has done it, and I believe HTC and Motorola have done it as well. So not doing the fingerprint sensor was going to look bad for Samsung. The problem that I see with the sensor is that you have to move your finger slow as you swipe across it, because that's how this one works. And unless I've misinterpreted everything I've read and the photos and videos that I've seen, where you put your finger isn't exactly intuitive. It's like partway on the button and partway off the button when you swipe.
Yes, which is weird. And it doesn't have the same kind of system level integration that Apple's doing. They did set it up so that you can assign different fingers to launch different apps, but that to me is it's a feature in search of a problem.
I'm picturing people setting the Facebook app to be their middle finger.
Maybe. Could be. That's funny. I don't have that, so I can't directly speak to it, but I just Samsung to me has always been king of introducing features that nobody's actually going to use. The sort of sound neat, but it's just the sort of thing that's
they do never going to be on anyone's radar. They do have a kitchen sink approach to all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. A feature that I think plays in very well to what you just said is the heart rate monitor.
It does have, so it has a built-in heart rate monitor. That's like super awesome, right?
Sure.
It's on the back. It's incorporated into the flash on the back of the device, and you put your finger on it, and it monitors your heart rate. And I suppose when I'm wanting to take my pulse in any given moment, that would be cool. But to me, heart rate monitoring is infinitely, infinitely more useful when it's continuous. And it's something you can reference as opposed to something you can do.
At a minimum, being able to set and let it monitor for a while, which is what most of the smartwatches that are fitness watches that include heart rate monitoring do. They don't monitor your heart rate until you say start monitoring now, and then they continue to monitor until you say stop.
Hmm.
Which I think is a really great way to do it, because then you can monitor your heart rate as you're working out.
Right. Or alternately, if it just did it all the time, and you would always have that record.
Sure.
But sure. like a pulse taking device on the back of a smartphone, it doesn't
to me seem to have any more value than the heart rate monitor apps that you can get for the iPhone that use the built in camera and flash.
Right. In either case, it's useful to the few to the specific case uses of I need to check my heart rate right now.
Right.
And that's just not a lot of people.
No, I think the majority of the people that need to be checking their heart rate probably need to do it more often than just when they're going to stick their finger on the flash on their camera or on their phone.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it lets Samsung say, "Look, we have fitness tech."
Yeah, And we beat Apple. We beat Apple to market for fitness tech. Speaking of which, Tim Cook tweeted on Monday, which was Steve Jobs' birthday. He did a couple tweets. One was he reminded people to stay hungry and stay foolish, which is one of Steve's favorite phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also tweeted that, as Steve said, the details matter and it's worth waiting to do it right. And I personally believe that that was very much a reminder to the world that Apple's not Samsung.
Yes. Yes, I can totally see that. I bet you're right. And the timing of a comment like that works out really well, because not only does it tie in with Steve Jobs' birthday, but it also ties in with announcements coming out at Mobile World Congress.
Right. So, Samsung also introduced a couple of new, I guess three sort of new quote-unquote smartwatches.
Yes, new additions to the Galaxy Gear family.
So there's the Galaxy Gear 2, the Galaxy Gear Neo, which has less features, which is just weird to me, and the Galaxy Gear Fit.
Right, so the Galaxy Gear 2 is, what'd they do? They moved the camera onto the watch, so it's not on the band anymore. And they made it the body slightly thinner. But I don't know if it's thin enough now that it's noticeable compared to the original. But the tumor on the watch band being gone, that's a good thing.
Yes.
The battery life is substantially improved. So you can go 2 days without charging instead of less than a day.
It's a little bit thinner.
Mm-hmm.
A tiny bit. It's like a millimeter thinner, which means that now it's simply way too thick. A significant achievement there. And the biggest change, of course, is that it runs Tizen OS instead of Android. So they're fragmenting their own little catastrophe of a smartwatch line with a new operating system for a device that is a companion device for Galaxy smartphones, which run Android.
Right, so to be clear, this is still considered an accessory for a $300 smartphone.
Well, yeah, $300 after, $200 to $300 after subsidies.
Right, yeah, so user cost, $200 or $300 smartphone, this is an accessory for it.
Right, and now it's running a different operating system. It's going to have a different SDK for developers who want to bother to make apps for it, which I can't imagine will be that many.
Well, some will lose bets, and they'll have to.
Tizen OS, by the way, is a Linux-based operating system that Samsung and Intel have been working on. There's been a lot of rumors that Samsung would move its smartphone line to Tizen, or that it wanted to, or that it was threatening to. This is really the first Tizen OS product that Samsung has released, and I think it's probably a mistake.
Well, if they're going to dabble with Tizen, this is the right place to do it.
Well, that's true. And running Tizen or Android, no one's going to buy these phones anyway. So, or these smartwatches anyway? So, it probably really doesn't matter. I mean, these things are just, they're still, you know, it's so, you know, Samsung rushed we'll put it this way. Samsung put out the original Galaxy Gear. I personally am utterly convinced that, they did so just so they could beat Apple's iWatch to market, so that people wouldn't call them a Me Too product when they eventually copied Apple. I mean, all of which is delusional, because there's still going to be a copied Me Too product. And now, 6 months later, they're introducing new models with a new operating system, and I still think they should bloody well wait to see what Apple's going to do so that they can copy it so that it will at least have a modicum of use.
There you go. Now, the Gear Fit, that's an odd little beast. So that's their fitness smartwatch. And instead of having a square display, it has a long rectangle display. And it's AMOLED, which means that it actually does look really nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's awkward from all the reviews that I've seen, and I hate to use the term review because these aren't even shipping products. People are writing reviews based on playing with them for 10 minutes.
Yeah, let's call them hands-on looks based on Mobile World Congress.
Equation. There we go. So based on the hands-on reports, it's awkward to use because you have to hold your arm at a weird angle to use it. And it doesn't do continuous tracking, say like a Fitbit or a Nike Fuel Band or a Jawbone. It tracks only when you explicitly tell it to, which really defeats the purpose, I think, of wearing a fitness band.
So, unless, of course, they're just intending that people only wear it when they're going to work out or something.
But it also has a lot of the same smartphone functions that you have in the other Gear products. So they're expecting people will probably wear this all the time. So is it supposed to be a smartphone or a fitness or a smartwatch or a fitness watch? Because it looks like it doesn't do either well. That said, I would love to get my hands on one and try it out for a little while because it's no secret that I totally have a thing for trying out all these fitness tracking devices.
Right. Right. I don't even know what to say about Samsung anymore. It's just, you know, it's almost gotten to the point where, well, I guess I said this about Microsoft. It's just gotten to the point where making fun of them is just makes me feel like I'm mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It just it almost feels wrong, like picking on the little kid.
Yeah. Like picking on the little kid. So, you know, speaking of Mobile World Congress, this actually is another segue, an actual segue. Let's look at the best mobile handset and devices that were announced today.
Oh, yeah.
So, best smartphone, HTC One.
Okay.
Okay. Best low-cost smartphone, because I guess you want to differentiate there. You got the Nokia Lumia 520, so congratulations, Microsoft. Best entry-level or feature phone, who cares? Most innovative device manufacturer of the year, LG, can't imagine why, but okay, whatever.
Okay.
Best mobile tablet.
Well, considering who was there, you know, our choices, it would seem, would be like Samsung, HTC, Motorola, LG, certainly not Apple.
You were mistaken, sir. It's the Apple iPad Air.
How about that?
The company that's not even there, because Apple doesn't participate in the Mobile World Congress, won best mobile tablet. And I am vastly entertained by that. I like the judge's comments about the device. The iPad Air packs class-leading performance and an attractive and svelte frame with its ecosystem. I'm sorry, while its ecosystem has an undisputed advantage in the number of format-optimized apps.
Yeah. So what they're saying is it's a well-built tablet. It has a good size. And if you want to have a well-rounded selection of apps for the device, there you go. These are the things that Apple can provide.
And they noted that the chip allows the battery to be even smaller. Screen looks great and everything. Anyway, it's interesting that Apple is not there, and Apple's tablet gets named the best tablet of the year. I enjoy that.
Yes, and I'm wondering if if the iPhone 5S was in the running for the best smartphone.
Well, you know, Mobile World Congress tends to be pretty spec-based. I know that the iPad Air was, its winning wasn't entirely spec-based, but what makes the iPhone 5S such a great device is really, it's the experience, it's the ecosystem, it's the whole widget package. You know, there are definitely phones with bigger and higher resolution displays and, you know, memory slots. People, you know, some people care about things like that. So it doesn't surprise me that the iPhone 5S was not named best phone.
All right,
they've got a different kind of agenda. It actually surprises me the iPad Air won for tablet. That's more surprising to me than the iPhone 5S not winning.
And yet there it is, and it is a great tablet. And I'm saying that not simply because this is an Apple centric podcast, and I have one sitting on my desk right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really good tablet. It's just simply a really good tablet.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. All right, Mobile World Congress. Exciting stuff coming out of wherever the heck they're doing that this year.
Barcelona.
Is it Barcelona?
Same as every year.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yes.
I'm apparently way on top of my MWC news.
That's right. I've got your back.
You do. You do have my back.
And I set you up so that you'll know for next year where it is.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Maybe I can remember. We'll see.
I've got your back.
Speaking, I can't do it. Let's move on to the Disney movies everywhere, anywhere.
I was waiting for you to say, speaking of your back, because
what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So Disney announced a new service platform thingy called Disney Movies Anywhere.
It took a little while to really figure out what the angle or the benefit of this was or is.
Yes. And I mean, so you and I actually, we went through it. We registered just to see how things worked. And so what it theoretically is a way of accessing your Disney movies digitally from any device, and when we say any device, we actually mean any Apple device or PC.
Right. And by Disney movies, we mean more than...
No, it's just Old Yeller.
Yeah, it's more than Old Yeller
and Escape from Witch Mountain.
Love Bug. It's all Disney properties.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's more than Escape from Witch Mountain.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. Like Pixar movies...
Yeah, Pixar movies, right? Marvel.
Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and they're teaming up with Apple to do this. And so, really, what they're doing is they're sort of offering a front end. Like, the way I likened it was, like, so you want McDonald's. I don't know why you want McDonald's, but just for the sake of argument, let's pretend that you want McDonald's.
All right.
And so, wanting McDonald's, you go to the guy who has a stand on the corner, and he sells McDonald's stuff. So you go to the guy on the corner with the stand, and you tell him you want a quarter pounder with cheese, and he says, okay, now great. Go over to McDonald's, pick it up, and give them the money. Because with Disney Movies Anywhere, you're buying your movies from iTunes,
and you're actually being sent over to the iTunes store. Like if you're on your Mac and you're in your web browser, and you decide you want to buy Up as an example,
Up. Fantastic movie.
It takes you over to the iTunes store, to the Up page in the iTunes store, where you can then choose to buy the movie. Now, taking it back to your McDonald's analogy.
Mm-hmm.
What you're getting out of the guy on the corner is he now is keeping track of everything that you have bought from McDonald's. So you can go back and see that same hamburger over and over right at his little booth. And he's going to give you Ronald bucks that you can use to buy things like hamburger memorabilia and French fry plushie toys and
so, stuff so like these that. Are actually Disney rewards.
Yes.
So basically, when you buy a movie through iTunes, a qualifying Disney movie through iTunes, you get Disney reward points, and you can also get a download code when you buy Disney DVDs and Blu-ray that again keeps it all in one place.
Right. So for someone that's like really, really into Disney stuff, they can see all of their Disney video purchases in one place. Much right. like and they can do in iTunes.
And they can stream them all in one place. So in some ways, this is kind of a brand-specific competitor to Ultraviolet, which is a service that neither Apple nor Disney have ever been a part of.
Yeah, it's a horrible digital video implementation from Sony. Yeah, and when I say horrible, I'm actually being really generous with the quality.
Yeah, NBC and Universal have signed on to it. Sony is a part of it. Several of the movie studios have signed on to it because it allowed them to do digital distribution of movies in a way that didn't
involve Apple.
Yeah, that's didn't give Apple line. Control. And, you know, not surprisingly, it's not so hot. Disney's never signed on to it. Apple's never signed on to it, obviously. And so Disney's doing a kind of a, you know, like it's a brand specific version of Ultraviolet. But it uses Apple for the back end and for the purchasing. And if you stream, so one of the things that you can do is you can actually stream your Disney movies to the app on iOS or to a browser on your Mac or PC. And Apple's actually handling the streaming, but it's going through their interface.
Right. And yes, you can do streaming of movies that you have purchased directly from the iTunes store, like through an Apple TV.
Right. You still have access to this stuff through iTunes also.
Yes, there we go. That's what I was going for right there. Thank you.
And I think it's pretty safe to assume that there will be a Disney Movies Anywhere app on the Apple TV sooner rather than later.
That I would like to see. And I know a lot of people will say, well, geez, that's really stupid because I can just go look at my movie purchases on Apple TV and everything's there. But for branding and for... There's a lot of Disney properties out there, more so than a lot of people mm-hmm. realize. So being able to see all of my Disney-related content in one place on my Apple TV, that's actually kind of cool. I could see that being really handy when the nieces come over.
Sure. You as for the launch, this is a limited time offer. For the launch, when you connect your Disney account to iTunes, which is part and parcel of this process, they'll give you a free copy of
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles, one of my favorite Pixar movies. And but there's a caveat. You must agree to let Disney sell your information, your personal information, to third parties. And you cannot get...
There's no way around that.
There's no way around that. So as much as I complain about that being Google's business model and Facebook's business model... it's important to note that Disney's doing the same thing with this.
Yes. And we tried this with an existing Disney account and with a new Disney account.
Right. Same and in thing. Both cases, you had to agree to it.
Yeah.
And this is, they're not bypassing Apple's privacy stuff on this because they're actually talking about the information garnered through the Disney service and not through, Apple's iOS services.
Right. So if you go and buy Alien off of the iTunes store, which I'm assuming Disney. You can, but then you go and buy Cars,
yep.
the transaction related to Alien will not be logged with your Disney account.
Yeah, right.
Disney, but buying cars Disney, will be.
Disney doesn't know anything about anything else you do.
Right.
Unless you're doing it with a Disney property. So, anyway, it's interesting. It's an interesting development. It's a little bit weird to me, because it is so closely tied to it. It's like closely tied to Apple, but it's. I mean, it seems like it would have made more. Oh, I know why. Seems like it would have made more sense for them to actually do something through an iTunes interface, so that to have Disney Movies Anywhere be part of iTunes rather than being a separate app. But if they did that, then Apple can't do that without sharing information with Disney, which is what Apple doesn't do. Right? Apple does protect our privacy.
That's true.
So that's why they're not doing that. And I'm sure it was important to Disney to be able to pimp us out, make a little money on the side.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Disney, I mean, they got to find money somewhere.
That's true. They do. Anyway, it's interesting. If you're looking for a copy, a free copy of The Incredibles, this is your chance to get it. So we
Before we move on.
Yeah.
I'm going to derail us. Well, not completely. It occurred to me, I really did want to know if Alien is available at the iTunes store. So I opened up my iPad and hopped into the iTunes app, went to the movie section so I could type Alien. Yes, yep. The Alien, Alien Director's Cut, Aliens, Alien Resurrection, and Alien 3. Also, Alien vs. Predator. They're all available through the iTunes store. But where I'm actually going with this is that when I brought up the page, there is Apple has a whole Harold Ramis section right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's really cool. Which they did, was it a week, 2 weeks ago, when Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away?
Right.
Yeah, so that's really cool that they did that. So if you're not familiar with Harold Ramis, and you should be, and you probably are without knowing it, go check that out, and you'll see a nice list of movies where you're going to go, oh, I didn't know he was part of that.
I saw in one tribute to him, I saw him referenced as the guy in stripes who's not Bill Murray.
Oh my God.
And that's kind of accurate.
I've seen him referred to as the hair guy from Ghostbusters, because he does have some pretty epic hair in Ghostbusters.
Speaking of epic hair, I'm doing a session in Macworld.
Okay, now I totally get the epic hair reference. People, Brian's hair is epic.
I do declare, you know, seeing you is as lovely and wholesome as seeing a cotton field in the thick of summer bloom.
Well, I do declare.
I'm doing a session on managing Bitcoins on your Mac at Macworld. And I think I'm doing a meetup. I just got an email today that I'm going to be doing a running a meetup for.
That's awesome.
For Bitcoins too. And I'm not sure what day my session is, but if you're going to come to Macworld, please come to my session. And you're doing a session too.
Two, actually.
Two sessions.
No kidding.
Two sessions. What are you doing?
All right. So one of my sessions is on wearable technology and what's cool and what's not.
Okay.
And I'll be talking about some of the trends in wearable technology as well. The other one is on fitness technology. And yeah, and I'm going to be talking in that session about what I did and the technology that I used to lose 60 pounds.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Oh, well, I'm also doing, because it's still all about me, I'm doing a, the Macworld All-Stars are going to be on the main stage. I think we're just talking. I don't think we're playing. Although it would be really awesome if we were playing. I think we're just talking. I'm not really sure yet. That's still kind of in the development. Fortunately, someone in the band is in charge of Macworld, so.
So that makes it a lot easier to get that sorted out.
Exactly. So you're doing fitness, you're doing wearables. I'm doing a meetup on Bitcoins. I'm doing a managing and mining Bitcoins on your Mac. And then Macworld All-Stars are going to be on the main stage on the show floor too. So yeah, we have a busy Macworld iWorld coming up, and I hope everyone comes out.
Yes. Also, depending on how the sessions fall that we're teaching, mm-hmm. there's a possibility that I will be on a couple different live recorded podcasts, so you can watch those. Which means it's likely at some point that you could be too.
It is very possible. Plus, Chuck Joyner will be there.
And Chuck's always awesome.
Yeah, and Chuck does the best interviews ever, so that'll be good too. Anyway, Macworld iWorld coming up at the end of March. It's going to be fun. We're gonna be doing a really cool Cirque du Mac party as well. I'm not going to say anything more about it now, but we'll be unveiling some stuff in the next few weeks.
Watch for me photobombing interviews that Chuck is doing, because I have a way of being able to find him and insert myself into a video without him realizing that I'm there.
Excellent.
So little Easter eggs for all of you people.
Excellent. You know, I should have stuck your head in the picture of the Steve Jobs statue that we covered.
That would have been awesome.
I could have had your head. You could have been peeking through the zero.
That would have been an awesome Easter egg. And you're really developing some great Photoshop skills. So you're totally capable of doing that.
Thanks, I think. Steve Jobs was honored with a statue. And as I understand it, this is all coming out of Belgrade. So, and I'm not sure if Apple organized it or if Apple was simply given the opportunity, but there were apparently 11,200 submissions for a statue of Steve Jobs. And Apple chose the one that they like, and it's going to be developed in full. It's like, right, because when a sculptor is proposing a piece that would be built on commission, they usually make a small version called a maquette.
Sure, like a desktop size version, so you can look at it and go, yeah, that's what I like.
Right. And then, once it's chosen, you know, once the corporation wants to actually put the big giant sculpture out in front of their building, then the full size version gets built. And that's what's going to happen here. And, I forget how to pronounce that guy's name.
Jobs. Steve Jobs.
No, the other guy.
Tim
Cook. The guy's making this statue. The artist. So, help me just stall for me.
Harold Ramis.
No, it's not. No, you're terrible at this.
No,
what's going on?
I can totally stall. I'm just going to stall with a different topic than
Dragan Radonovich. I'm assuming that the C with the accent is itch, but I'm not really sure. Anyway, he's a world famous sculptor. He put together a piece that I think is just amazing looking. A lot of people hate it. It's very, very polarizing, I think. It's got Steve Jobs' face. It's got a 1 and a 0. It's got Cyrillic letters, which I still have not had the time to look up. I got yelled at in email for not finding out what those letters actually were, and I still haven't done that.
Well, the day is young-ish.
It's probably S and J, as the person who yelled at me pointed out. 0, 1 for binary. It's a really, really interesting looking sculpture, and supposedly Apple's going to display it outside one of the the Google translation said a branch office, so you know Apple has facilities all over Cupertino, and it's not, I'm not sure which one this is going to be at yet.
You know what I like about it is that it's not what you would typically expect from a Steve Jobs related sculpture, where it'd be like streamlined, white, sleek, you know, that sort of thing. And maybe a lifelike bust incorporated in some way. This is so very not that.
You know, there's like a roughness to it. Now, supposedly, again, this is according to the Serbian publication, Apple said that they liked the imperfections of the piece. And it is very, it's imprecise, and it's, you know, it's sort of rough. I don't know. I think it has a more
human feel, as opposed to, it's more like Wally than Eve.
That's an interesting comparison. And, you know, it has been, like I said, it's been very polarizing. A lot of people think that it's awful. You know, interesting art that pushes boundaries, art that is often recognized as being great later, is often initially greeted with skepticism, hatred, rejection.
Disdain.
Disdain, etc. And
excitement.
And yeah, and excitement. I like this thing. It's amazing looking.
Okay, I have to jump back to the Disney thing real quick.
Okay.
And that's because we did this whole test yesterday afternoon on the Disney movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just got the email saying I signed up.
Huh. Solid.
So only 24 hours later, you know, after I've downloaded two Disney movies, paid $20 just so I could get one of them to test, and they're just now saying, hey, it looks like you signed up for the Disney movie thing.
That is some solid work. Nice job, Disney.
Yay team.
All right, the other thing to talk about, I guess, in another way that Steve Jobs is being honored.
I had a feeling we'd go to the next tribute.
Supposedly, the U.S. Postal Service is working on a stamp for, golly, is it 2014 or 2015?
I don't recall. I'm assuming 2015, just because the pace that government agencies move at.
Well, it's been in the works for a while. I think it's actually 2014.
Oh, well, there you go.
But I am still scrolling.
Well, then I'll talk about it, because what I'm curious, considering Steve Jobs' dalliance earlier in his life with mind-altering substances, when you lick the stamp to put it on an envelope, will you start tripping balls?
Somehow I doubt that. And you were correct. It's 2015.
Oh, there you go.
I only wrote the story. What do I know?
That you put together a really great mock-up of a stamp. I'm really pleased with the graphic you made.
Thank you. I actually like that a lot too.
Yeah, and actually another thing about graphics, I just love the dedication we all have to coming up with just really clever graphics for articles. I know a lot of people don't notice them; they just see them, and it adds to the story, and they don't really think much about it. But for those of you that actually catch what we're doing with graphics, we have digital hugs for every one of you.
Yep, absolutely.
But stamps.
Stamps, yep. Steve Jobs is going to have a stamp. I wonder what he would think about that. I wonder what he would think about a statue. I bet he would hate having a statue of him put at Apple.
I think you're right. I think he would be adamantly opposed to a Steve Jobs stamp. Unless maybe he could lick it and get all loopy. No, he would not go for the statue or the stamp. I think that's just totally not his style.
I think he'd be keener on the stamp than he would be the statue.
Really? I think he'd be horribly uncomfortable, equally uncomfortable with both.
Well, you know, we say that, and Steve Jobs was absolutely aware of his place in history.
Yes, but he also had a way of distancing himself from the rest of the world. And I think these very public displays recognizing him would have been uncomfortable for him.
Probably, especially the statue. But here's the reality. The reality is that we do these things when we honor the dead. We're not doing them for the dead. We're not the honor is not for the dead. The honor is actually for us. To remember the dead.
That's a really valid point.
And yeah, I know that. My guess is that, for instance, Steve Jobs would not have been keen on celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Mac.
I think that if Steve Jobs was running Apple, there would not have been a 30th anniversary celebration.
Just like there was not a 25th
right
anniversary celebration. And Steve was famous for, you know, not wanting to look back. You know, he wasn't interested in what's been done.
Not looking back.
Right. And being diligent about looking forward. You know, what you did for me yesterday doesn't matter. What are you doing for me now? What are you going to do for me tomorrow? You know, what am I going to do tomorrow? You know, don't dwell on what you know, like when you've done something great, finish it, move on to the next great thing, right? Don't dwell on it. That's one of his things. And I get that. And it's part of what made him so great at what he did. But for we the users, there is a lot of you know, there's a lot of emotion, and not only remembering Steve Jobs, but remembering the remarkable work that was done by the original Macintosh team, by thinking about the impact that the Mac has made on our lives in the intervening years. This stuff is done for, you know, for us. It's not necessarily for Steve.
Right. And, you know, the whole 30th anniversary thing, I think, was a really nice gesture for the people that poured their hearts into the design of the original Macintosh.
Mm-hmm. And the people that have done so much work since then.
Oh, absolutely. It was really nice getting to see these people recognized. And it was really cool for all the employees, past and present, when Apple did the big posters with every employee's name on them.
Yep. Their signature, right?
Yeah, that stuff was just really cool. Really,
yeah, it is really cool, and the Steve Jobs stamp will be really cool.
Oh yeah, I think that when the stamps roll out, the U.S. Postal Service will have a horrible time keeping them in stock.
Probably, yeah, and there should be a lot of first day covers.
Yes, and I'm guessing that when stamps like this roll out, those are actually really great money makers for the post office, because not only do they sell the stamps, they sell a lot of them, but I bet most of them don't get used. So it means the Postal Service gets to collect the money for a service that they ultimately don't have to provide for, you know, because they're not being put on letters that are being sent out.
Right. Right. And yeah, and they actually, you can do first day covers through the Postal Service, and that's definitely a money maker for them.
Oh, absolutely. Too. Yeah. And of course, even though I'm not a stamp collector, I will get a hold of some simply because it'll be cool. I hope it looks like the stamp you designed, Brian.
I hope it looks better, actually. But
I think what you designed looks really good.
Well, thanks. I will be a philatelist for the day.
But you can get an ointment for that, and it'll get better, right?
Stamp collectors everywhere are shaking their fist at you.
Yes, they are. They're stamp-loaded fists. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that, believe it or not, we have done a show.
Every week. It's a surprise.
Every week. Are we going on like a year where we've done a show every week?
We missed one week during CES because it was just simply not possible to make it happen. Right. But other than CES, we haven't missed a show.
That's right. Well, next year for CES, let's pre-record a show where we read selected passages from Dr. Seuss and hope that we don't get sued.
You know what we could do is make up our own Dr. Seuss style verses.
Oh, yes, we could do that. That's an idea. Just record that ahead of time and then run that on Wednesday during CES.
Yeah. I mean, like, I do not like this Samsung watch. I think that Samsung has a botch.
I was going with a different word. But before we get off on too much of a rabbit hole, let's actually go ahead and go.
Okay, because I think I just realized what word you were going with, and I don't want to ruin our family-friendly rating.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, please write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamm at both places. And head on over to the iTunes store. Rate us, because it makes us feel all warm and fuzzy when you do.
Yep. And I'm on Twitter at TMOBrian. It's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at The Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And you can find my blog at geektales.com. And you can find Jeff's at freshbrewtales.com. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at The Mac Observer.